Alright, we're starting the top of Chavdalat Amud Aleph. We're continuing with the statement that Rav Chanina made at the, after the Mishnah, which is that when it comes to Rov Vikarov, if you have competition between these two principles of decision making, and it's Rov and Karov, Hochim Achar Rov, then the Rov is Kovel. We go after the majority rather than the proximate or the proximity. So the Gemara wants to know, says over here, Amar Abaye, Afanan Nami Tanina. So it's three lines down in the Gemara, and Chavdar Amar Aleph. Amar Abaye, Afanan and Taminina. We also have a Mishnah that supports this idea. Dam Shnimtza Pruzdor, Sfeko Tamei. Shechezkato Minamakor, Afagav Dikaliya Dimikarva. Right, so this is from, is the Dine Nida, it's from the Dinam of Nida. And here we say that if a woman sees blood, and it's a safek where the blood came from, then she is vadai tamei. She's vadai tamei, or tamei'a, shechezkato min ha-makor, because the chazaka is that it came from the uterus. Even though there are other possibilities of where the blood came from. Now, what I'll do here is, we'll spend more time on it when we get to Nida. The Gemara has a view of the anatomy of a woman, which is very hard to necessarily reconcile with our understanding of the anatomy of the modern woman. But
it's the same woman.
I'm assuming so, but there are different ways to reconcile these things according to the Mefarshim. But the basic premise is that dam that comes from the makor being the uterus, is dam tamei. Then there is the puzdor, what Chazal describes as a puzdor, which is the vaginal canal. So blood that is released from the uterus into the vaginal canal, that dam is dam min ha-makor and is dam tamei. Now Chazal believed that there was an organ called the aliyah, right, which is some organ that sat above the uterus in the vaginal canal and had a connection, somehow had a connection into the vaginal canal. And that organ also, at some times, not frequently, but at times, released blood into the vaginal canal. That blood clearly would not be, right, tamei, because it's not coming from the makor, it's not coming from the uterus, it would be tahor. Now, it's hard to reconcile today with that, because we don't have, or we don't understand what type of organ we're talking about here that is releasing into the vaginal canal. But I'd say if you would, for instance, imagine that somehow the urinary tract was connected, which isn't the case, but had it been that way, if there was blood in the urine versus blood that's coming from the makor, right? I mean, that was coming from a urinary tract infection versus that which is coming from the makor, or blood that's in the vaginal canal because of a wound on the vaginal canal rather than in the uterus, those are all dam tahor. Saying you can come up with scenarios that are similar in mitzius, even though they don't necessarily match exactly what Chazal is describing over here. So now, this mission says, dam shenimtza bruzdor, you have blood that's found in the vaginal canal. So it's a safek here where the blood came from, where it emanated from, according to Chazal. It's a safek if it emanated from the uterus, right? Or whether it emanated to what the Chazal called the aliyah, right? This other organ that released the blood over here. And that blood would be tahor blood. So you have a safek. We don't know the origins of the blood. So now you have two options. The two options are it came from the uterus, the makor, or it came from the aliyah. So which one do you choose? So Mishnah says, sfeko. When you have the safek, tamei. She's tamei avadid. The blood is tamei, no matter what. So now what does that mean? That means that we're deciding over rov over karov. Because rov of the blood that comes out or is in the vaginal canal comes from the makor, comes from the uterus. Whereas karov, it's closer to the aliyah, this other organ that the Chazal are describing. The blood in the vaginal canal is actually closer to that than to the makor, because it's further down the vaginal canal. The uterus is obviously all the way at the top, right, by the cervix, which releases into the vaginal canal. The aliyah is somewhere along that canal, and therefore the blood is closer to the aliyah. So you see over here what we're choosing, rov over karov, which is exactly what Rechanina's statement was. So Amalei Rova, Rova says, what are you talking about? This is rov umatsui kamart. Here you don't just have rov, you have rov umatsui. Rov umatsui leke lemanda amar. There's no one who disagrees when it comes to rov and matsui. Now what is the difference between rov and matsui? So that's rov means that the majority of blood would emanate from the uterus. Matsui means it's common for there to be blood from the uterus, or there is a lot of blood that comes from the uterus. That's the way Rashi describes it. Is our damav rabim yoter mishal aliyah? It has more blood than the other organ that's releasing blood into the canal. Or it's a regular, on a regular occurrence, blood will flow from the uterus. I mean, that's every a woman's cycle. So monthly, she's going to have blood that comes out of the uterus. It's both the rove of blood that comes from the majority. I mean, that's a quantitative statement about the blood. The majority of blood comes from the uterus. But there's a matsui, which is that there's frequently there is blood coming from the uterus. So therefore you have two things. You have rova matsui, and according to Rova, nobody would disagree in that case. When it comes to rova matsui, karova is not even a consideration. That's what Rova says. The Tani Rabchia. So over here, whether you are goris the dalit or not is a question. I mean, is this part of Rova's statement, or is this the Gemara saying the Tani Rabchia over here? So the Tani Rabchia says, Dama nimsab bruzdor. Blood that is found in the vaginal canal, chayvin alav al biyata mikdash, b'sorfin alav et hachumah, that it's such a vadai, the blood that is found in the vaginal canal, that it's such a vadai that it's tamei, that we say that you are bring korbanot. If you enter the mikdash when you're tamei, you have to bring a korban for biyata mikdash. And if you this chumah touches, or a woman touches chumah, the chumah is so absolutely tamei that you burn it. We don't say it's a safek betulin that we wait and see what the status of it, let it rot. No, we burn it immediately. So that suggests to us that we have such overwhelming evidence that this blood must be tamei that we're willing to do or treat it like a vadai tamei. And why is that? That is because it is a rove and a matsui. Because if it was simply rove, then you would have number one, possibly if it just rove, then what did Rav Chanina come to add? In Rabbi Chanina wasn't adding anything. If we have a Mishnah that explicitly says that you take rove over karov, so it must be that this Mishnah is talking about this price of Tani Rav Chia. The price of Rav Chia is talking about something else. That's number one. And number two is that it has to be something that is so compelling that it's not even a decision point. I mean, it's rove matsui. That means that it's a vadai, and there's nothing to talk about. So that's what the Gemara is suggesting here. The Tani Rav Chia is that it's rove matsui. But then you have a strange statement by Rava afterwards, Bishmami Namid Rav Chia. Tlat. We can learn three things out from the statement of Rav Chia. Shmamina, Rov, Vikarov, Alach, Achara Rov. When it comes to a competition between Rov and Karov, we go after the Rov, similar to the statement of Chanina. Bishmamina Ruba Doraisa. You can see that here that Rov is a dictate Mina Torah, because we're willing to have you bring a korban to the Mikdash, burn Chuma on it, means that you're dealing on a Doraisa level of Tuma. Vishvamina itad the Rabbi Zeira. And therefore we also hold of Rabbi Zeira. Rabbi Zeira is an opinion in the Gemara Ketubot and other places that Amar Rabbi Zeira, afa pisha daltot midinan ulot. That even though the gates of the city are closed, what's the case here? The case is that you have 10 butcher shops in the city. 9 of them serve or sell kosher meat. One of them sells non-kosher meat. The person finds a piece of meat on the street. So what do we say? Kol d'parush? Miruba parush. That anything that is found away from any existing fixed item, meaning that it's found in the middle of the street, so we have no clue which butcher shop it came from, then we assume it came from the rove. What are the rove of butcher shops in the town? The rove of the butcher shops are kosher. There's an opinion in the Gemara Ksubot that you don't only need rove of the butcher shops, but you also have to say that the rove of butchers in the whole area, not just in the city, are Ksherim, are Yisraelim, and therefore if you're Mitztaref, the rove of the city, plus the rove of the whole area that's around, then you get what's called Trei Rube, you get two roves, and that's enough to make it kosher. Rabbi Zeir says, no, even though the doors of the city are closed, locked, the doors of the city are locked, then we're only dealing with one rove. One rove is that the city has 9 butchers, kosher butchers, versus one non-kosher butcher. So then, one rove, so we can say, Shmami Nadita Rabbi Zeir, why? Because the Isha, right, is the Chidatot Midina Nulot Amya. Right, that a woman is exactly like a closed city doors, why, or gates. Because a woman, there's only one, blood doesn't enter the woman from the outside. Blood is only coming from the inside. So there's no, the only thing we're dealing with, the only rove that we're dealing with is the rove of the Mekor. We're not dealing with that the rove Dam is coming from somewhere else. There's a second Rube over here. There's only one rove, just like by the case of Rabbi Zeira. And we say, and nevertheless we pass them like the rove. So now what's the problem with Rava's statement now? Rava just told us what Rabbi Chia, we learned three things from Rabbi Chia. What do we learn the three things? Rove and Karov, we go after the Rove. Number two, Rove is Doraisa. Rove is Doraisa. Number three is the Rabbi Zera, that you only need one Rove, not two Roves. But Rava is the one who just before said that the whole Mishnah Nida is dealing with a case of Rove and Matsui. how could he prove from the Mishnah of Rabbi Chiya, and that's, we're bringing this Breiser of Rabbi Chiya to prove what that Rovu Matsui nobody argues on. And then Rova comes and says, oh, you know what the conclusion of Rabbi Chiya is? Rov and Karov, we go after the Rov. I thought Rova just said that Rovu Matsui is different. So how is he taking this case that's so unusual and proving something that he just dismissed before? Where it says, right? That is no one who would argue on that. When it says, Rava went back, or he reversed his position from that. And therefore, right, we have the conclusion, or Rava can draw this conclusion, despite the fact that before he said that this was Rav Umatsui. Okay, now Itmar, we have a new case here. Chavit Shitzafu Banar. We have a barrel that is floating in the river. Amarav, nimtzeit keneged ir shruba Yisrael mutar. If this barrel full of wine that is floating in the river is opposite a Jewish city, then you can drink the wine. We can assume that it is kosher wine. It's not yayin nesech or stam yenam, and therefore you can drink the wine. Keneged ir shruba nechrim. If it's near a city that is the rov is non-Jewish, then asira, you can't drink from it. So Rav is koveya by where the barrel is found along the river. Shmuel says it doesn't matter, it's irrelevant where it's found, it's always asur, the barrel of wine is asur. So imar mahai dekra ate. So let us suggest, or dekra, dekira actually is the word, that the Bach changes it. Let us say that it came from the city of Dekra or Dekira, which was further up the Euphrates. It was a city up much further up the Euphrates River that was a non-Jewish city. So let us assume that the barrel emanated from the city much further upriver, and that's a non-Jewish city. So the source of this wine is Yain Nesach, it's Tem Yenim possibly. So when it says, Lema, but Rabbi Chanina kamiflege. Let us suggest that they argue in the position of Rabbi Chanina. And we mentioned yesterday, this Tosfos says, why do they bring Rabbi Chanina here in our case by Rav and not other cases? Because here, it's a, what we call Rov and Karov. We have a case here where it's Rov versus Karov, which is a Karov de Muchach. Right? It's a Karov that is good evidence that it probably emanated from the area nearby. And therefore, since it's a Karov de Muchach, we said yesterday that Rabbi Chanina is the one who believes that even in the face of Karov de Muchach, we still say Rov is Koveya. So that's why they bring Rabbi Chanina over here. Whereas in other places, they don't bring Rabbi Chanina in because those are cases of regular Rov and regular Karov. And over there, almost everybody would agree, or others would agree even that Rov is Koveya. Chanina's Chiddush is that even when there's a Karov de Muchach, even when the Karov seems to be more overwhelming or the evidence seems to be in favor of the Karov, nevertheless, we say Rov. So that's the case here. Let's say that they argue in Rabbi Chanina. Demar itlei de Rabbi Chanina. Umar leitlei de Rabbi Chanina. One of them holds like Rabbi Chanina, one of them doesn't. Who's that? Rav does not hold of Rabbi Chanina because he says Karov is dictates over here. It's near the Jewish city. It's kosher wine. Near the non-Jewish city, it's non-kosher wine. Right? So he goes after Karov and not after Rov. Whereas Shmuel goes after Rov over here, and he holds like Rabbi Chanina. You have Rov and Karov, you go after the Rov. And you have to assume here, right, that the Rov there is non-Jewish. I mean, the Rov of people along the Euphrates River are non-Jewish inhabitants or residents.
But why Rabbi Chanina? Because Rabbi Chanina is the town that says, even if I have
a Karov, the
Muchach,
right.
So I go according to
Rov.
This for sure is not a Demuchach.
We'll see in a second that the Gemara believes, we'll see that Shmuel believes that a barrel would not make it that far downriver. It would be unlikely that a barrel could survive and make it that far downriver. So the fact that it's found in the river proximate or adjacent to this city would be indicative that it came from this city because the barrel wouldn't survive. How long is the barrel going to stay afloat in the river? And that's the underlying assumption here. That would probably be a Karov Demuchach. Where it says, well, everybody holds a Rabbi Chanina. When it comes to Rov and Karov, we go after the Rov. This is their machlokas over here. If he really came from the city upriver, up the Euphrates, the winds and bends of the river would have sunk the barrel. There'd be no way that the barrel would have gotten this far downriver. Because you either have right these places where it turns and it'll wash the barrel up or sink the barrel, or you have these pshurei, which are the melting snow, right? The melting snow which comes down from the river creates these little areas, and those little inlets that are created by the overflow from the snow or from the melting snow will push the barrel into, and they'll get caught there. Or we said the Akule. Akule, I would have read as, you know, the bends in the river. But the way Rashi translated, so does the Rabbeinu Gershom, that they suggest that Akule is that it goes through the rough river, the white water part of the river, and that will smash the barrel. That's the way I would explain it. But both Rashi and Rabbeinu Gershom go a step further and say that there are whirlpools in these areas. When it goes through the rapids generate whirlpools, and the whirlpools would sink the barrel. So that's the problem is that there's too much along the way, too many obstacles along the way of the river for him to get all the way upriver down to here. So the likelihood is, seems very remote. And if the likelihood is very remote, therefore we're going to go after Karov, we're going to go after the closest city. And that's what you were asking before, David. Why is it a Karov Demuchach here? Because the likelihood of a barrel reaching here is very low. But now, so what is Shmuel's position there? How does Shmuel believe that it's coming from upriver? This was a lucky barrel. It got caught in the current. And the current washed it all the way down river, meaning that it got caught in the, you know, the middle of the stream in the current, and that washed it all the way down river, and it made it to here. So that would be the machlokas between Rav and Shmuel. It was basically about the likelihood that a barrel would make it from upriver down river, meaning that what is the likelihood? And almost like a Metzias question of how can a barrel make it to this far or not? And therefore, that will dictate whether you have a rove or not in this situation. All right. Right. So how chatzva the chamra? If a barrel of wine dishtakach bepardesa de orla, you found in the middle of a vineyard full of orla. So now, what do you want to? The automatic assumption would be that it's a derivative, or it came from this vineyard, and therefore it would be wine of orla. So when it says sharya ravina, ravina says no problem, right? You can drink this wine. Lema, let us suggest mishum de sabala ki Rabbi Chanina, that he holds like Rabbi Chanina. Why does he hold like Rabbi Chanina? Because here you have Karov. Karov is in this vineyard of Orla. And this is again a Karov de Muchach, right? This Vissim. Right? And then you have Rov. Rov wine in the city or Rov wine in the area is not wine that is, right, is Orla. So where it says, no, shiny hatam. Over there it's different. The Mignav Mina Atznuya Begavelo Matznei. Had the wine really been sourced from this field of Orla, the thieves would not have hid it in the field that they stole it from. The likelihood, right, the reason that the barrel's out here is because it was stolen. And if it's stolen, right, the smart thief doesn't leave his goods in the place that he's stealing it from. Although it seems like a good idea, right, that nobody would look for it, right? But anyway, but the fact that the barrel is found here in the field of Arla is almost indicative that it didn't come from here, that it came from outside. And therefore, it's not, right, it's not really a question of Rov and Karov anymore. The likelihood of it being the Karov is diminished, or really doesn't exist here because it doesn't make sense. But again, this is a case, why they bring up Rabbi Chanina again? Because this is a Karov de Muchach, again, that it's in the vineyard, makes it almost sound like it should be here, and it belongs to this vineyard. On the other hand, the Gemara comes and rejects that and says it's not even really a Karov, because nobody would place such a barrel inside of the vineyard if they stole it, and therefore must be coming from outside of this vineyard. I mean, I would have suggested that nobody would make the effort to press Orla grapes, right, and put them into a barrel. Seems almost pointless to do such a thing because they are not permissible to eat. I mean, you can't drink the wine that comes out of the Orla grapes. The fact that someone made the effort and put it into a barrel is almost, to me, is indicative that it came from outside of the vineyard. I mean, the Gemara doesn't answer that. It would be a suggestion that I would have made in terms of why you would think that this is not a case of Karov, because it just doesn't make so much sense.
Right? Right,
we're assuming that it's a city of. You have to assume that the city is Rove Jews and that the area is Rove Jews. That's correct. That's only true of wine. Of But if it's grapes, people would hide it in the field because they're not distinguishable anymore. And if you're stealing grapes and you leave them in the field that you stole them from, then there's no suspicion. Nobody knows really how these grapes got here. They look like they belong here. Therefore, it would not. Right, arouse any suspicion, and the ganavim may leave it there. So Mar says, "Hanu zike de chamro." There were these flasks of wine, the ashkechan bekofai. They were found in the vineyards, right? Where they pressed the grapes, right? Sharunu Rabo. Rabo says, "No problem. You can drink from them." So now, why can you drink from them? Again, now we have these flasks of wine that are sitting in the Beit Kofai, that are sitting out in the Kerem, and it's a Jewish Kerem. Right? And Rav goes ahead and says, drink them. Why? You have two possibilities. Karov, which would be that it's in a Jewish vineyard, so it's kosher wine, and therefore you should be able to drink it. Or you have Rov. Rov of the city that we're talking about here is a city of Nachrim. So if it's a Rov of the city of Nachrim, the Rov would dictate that you cannot drink it, because it could be Yayin Nesek or Stam Yainam, and you shouldn't be able to drink it. Nevertheless, Rov says, Mutar, and go after the Karov. Now, it's first of all, he's going against Rabbi Chanina, but also he's going against himself. Rava before told us that when it comes to Rov and Karov, we go after the Rov. Over here he's suggesting you go after Karov. So how do you reconcile Rova? So it says, Shani Hotam, the Ruva, the Shfuchai, Yisrael Ninhu. Over there, the majority of wine spillers, I don't hear, but really mean wine pourers, right? They are Jewish because they pour from the barrels into the flasks in order to sell the wine to the passerbys or to the travelers in this area. So that's the Gemara's assumption, is that there's another rove that is over here. There's that you say rove Nachrim are in the city, but the rove of wine merchants are Jewish. If the rove of wine merchants are Jewish, then we can assume that it's found in Nodot, it's found in these flasks. These are flasks that are normally used by sellers of wine. So Mar says, but that's only true on Emile Biravrave. If there are large flasks, because when they're in large flasks, that's normally the way that it's sold. If you're selling, the merchants that sell wine to passerbys or to travelers sell in big flasks. Aval Zutre, if they are small flasks, then Imor Meovrei Dachim Naful. Then we can suggest that they fell from the passerbys, meaning fell from the passerbys in the sense that they brought their own wine. They're not purchasing that wine. Small flasks are items that person brings from his home. That's his own, right, tzedel ederach. He would take in a small flask. And therefore, who is the rove here? The rove of the Ovrei Drachim are Nachrim. If that's the case, you have to assume that it's non-kosher wine. Whereas if it's found in the larger flasks, the assumption is that the person purchased it on the way. I mean, it's the equivalent of, right, someone's in a theme park or somewhere else or in some sort of museum, and you find something that fell. So if it has the wrapping from the museum or the museum park on it, you know that it was purchased here. It was probably bought over here. Whereas if it comes, it's in some generic, right, thing. The person probably bought the food from home. So same thing over here. If it's small flask, we assume he brought it from home. If it's a big flask, we assume that he purchased it, right, in the area. So where it says, what happens if you have small and big flasks tied together that are falling on the floor? We can assume that they were purchased over here. Why? Because what did they do? They placed them on, how do you carry big flasks of wine? You place them over the donkey. Right? You have a string between them and you balance them over the donkey. What happens if one is heavier than the other? You start drinking from one, you use one of them. Now the imbalance. So what do? To balance it off, you put a small flask next to the big flask to be the counterbalance or to be the weight on the other side. So the reason that there's a small flask here is not because it all came from home, but rather they bought big flasks and they were using the small flask as a weight or a balance. And that's why we can assume in that case that they were Jewish, because the majority of merchants were Jewish wine merchants. And therefore it's found in the large flasks that came from the Jewish merchants of wine. All right, now we're almost getting to the Mishnah that we've quoted so many times. We're getting there. Rechikin et elan min ha'ir. You have to distance a tree from the city, esrim v'chamesh amot, 25 amot, u'becharu v'shikma. When it comes to a sycamore or a carob tree, it has to be 50 amot away. Now you would have thought, why do you have to put it 50 amot away? We're going to see in the Gemara why, but you would have thought because of the roots, right? They have larger roots, right? But we'll see in a second, maybe that is not the case. Abba Sholomer, Abba says, called ilan tzrak, any tree that is not fruit-bearing, chamishim amot, has to be 50 amot away. V'imayir kadma. Now, let's look at the circumstance. The tree is now planted and growing there. Imayir kadma. If the city was there first, kotzeitz, you cut the tree down, you get no compensation. You planted the tree illegally. Tree was planted illegally, it can be cut down by the members of the city. Well, imayilan kadam. What happens if the tree existed before the city existed? Then, adayin kotzeitz, you're still allowed to cut the tree down, but you have to compensate the individual for the tree. So even though the city trumps, meaning in the sense that the city gets to knock the tree down, they have the right to cut the tree, nevertheless they have to compensate for it. Saveg zekadam, saveg zekadam. If we're uncertain as to which was first, the tree or the city, kotzeitz. Why are you kotzeitz? We saw this in Gemara Babitzia. The Gemara Babitzia mentioned this. You're kotzeitz because what are the two possibilities? If the tree was first, what do you do to a tree that's first? You cut it down. What do you do to a tree that came after the city was there? you cut it down. The only safek here is whether you get compensated after it's cut down or not. So in terms of cutting the tree down, there is no safek. You're going to cut the tree down. So if there's a safek here, we say cut the tree, and the safek will be, right, veinu notein damim. The safek will be about whether he gets compensated. Then you have to bring a raya to get compensated, but otherwise, the tree still gets cut down. So Gemara says... All right, so the Gemara is going to discuss right now. Very good. My timer. What's the whole reason that you don't allow these trees to be planted within proximity to the city? It's for the beauty of the city. So for the beauty of the city, we don't allow trees to be planted in the area around the city. So Gemara says, but typically, they don't seem sade migrash, velo migrash sade. So why don't we learn that the problem here is that you're not allowed to convert the migrash, which is the open space, and sadeh is the farmed area around the city, right? Meaning that there is a requirement. It's Gemara in Erechin, but there's a requirement around the city. There is machlokus, which we're going to see in a second, whether it applies to all cities or only Arei Leviim. But in the Torah, when it takes back the Arei Leviim, it says that you will give them the city. They get 2,000 amot around the city. In those 2,000 amot, right, you must have the first 1,000 amot are empty space, airspace, open space. The second 1,000 amot are for planting or for farming. And the Mishnah, or what we're quoting over here, is that you're not allowed to switch farmed area to planted area. I mean, open area to farmed area, and the farmed area to open area. I mean, that they're specific. So over here, why are you allowed to plant a tree in what is the open space around the city? So why is the Gemara going after this? Chamishi Yamama, 25 Amot, Noye Yair, for the beauty of the city. There's a Migrash. You have to have open space, 1,000 amot of open space around the city. What are you even talking about here? So Gemara says, Lotricha, the Rabbi Lazar, Damar, Osim, Sadeh, Migrash, Migrash, Sadeh. So Gemara, the Rabbi Lazar is of the opinion that din only applies to Arei Leviim. Doesn't apply to a normal city. So therefore, there's no issue, Rabbi Lazar, thank you, that there is no requirement then, or in this city, there's going to be no requirement or no restriction against making the Migrash, making the open space into a Sadeh. So therefore over here, the reason we don't allow you to plant here is because of the beauty of the city. Right now,
we have to discuss
what this means, right? That is only true by... right, vegetation, tvuot, grains. Avali la note of dinan. So when it comes to trees, what Dovid just asked, what do you mean? Trees are beautiful. Having open space with trees. Look outside. Nobody wants a bare mountain or an empty field out there. People would love to have trees. That is more beautiful to have trees. So what are you claiming here? But when it comes to the inside, the first 25 amot or the first 50 amot around the city, you want a little bit of open space. Beyond that, when we talk about migrash, the open space that is not worked or farmed, there we don't require it to be empty and open space, just that it cannot be farmed or planted, but it could have ilanot, it could have trees. So there would be a balance between the two items, which is that both, right, the trees are beautiful, but they're only beautiful when they're somewhat of a distance away from the city. They're 25-50 amot away from the city. Again, but the open space is useful when it's closer in and when it's right next to the city. So that's what the Gemara is suggesting over here, that's the requirement to distance these trees away or cut these trees down is because of this noye hayir. So Gemara says, Umana tamra deshani ben zraim leilanot. How can I prove to you that there's a difference between farming, you know, vegetation, grains, and ilanot in trees? Because we have that adin in Shabbos, the Tanya. Kapaf yoter mi beit sataim. So it's a rule in Erevin, the Gemara talks about an Erevin, that a place that is enclosed that you can carry in, right? Anything that's enclosed, that has a wall around it, has an eruv in a sense around it, you're allowed to carry in it. That is true if it is a beit dira. If it's mukaf the dira, if it's surrounded for living space and livable space, then one is allowed to carry in that whole space no matter how big the space is. On the other hand, if it's an area that is mukaf, that is surrounded by a wall or has an eruv around it, but it's not used for livable space, it's not used to be live in. In that case, there's a maximum amount of space that you're allowed to surround, which is Beit Satayim. This is the area of the Mishkan. Chatzer HaMishkan is the maximum amount of space that you're allowed to carry in. So now, Kapaf Yotermi Beit Satayim. What happens if you have a Kapaf, like a yard, a big backyard, that is much bigger, that is bigger than the Chatzer HaMishkan? Shukaf L'dira. That was surrounded for livable, inhabitable space to be lived in. It's going to have a house in it and livable space. Then you're allowed to carry that. That's what we said in the Arabic. But what happens? Nizra Rubo. What happens if he goes in and he plants? The majority of that space, he goes in and he plants grains or he plants vegetation in it. Harihu kigina va'asur. It has a din of a gina and it'll be asur to carry in it anymore. Why? Why is that? Because when it comes to when you plant it with zera or tuah, can you live there anymore? No. That removes the inhabitable space that's here. It's no longer a dira anymore. If the roof of it is now planted, you're not going to live there. On the other hand, nita rubo, if you plant trees in the majority of it, harihu kechatzer umutar. That is like a backyard, right? That is like a yard that's next to the house, and that would be mutar. So we see here the differentiation between trees and, farming of grains and vegetation, because vegetation and farming are not considered dira. They're not considered livable space, inhabitable space. When it comes to trees, we look at that as like a yard. We look at that as an extension of the living space. So therefore, the Gemara says we can differentiate between trees here and other items. When it comes to migrash, open space, in Ochanami, you can put trees in the open space. That's not a violation of the migrash around the city. But there is a buffer zone, which is right up against the city of 25 amot or 50 amot, where there can be nothing, including trees. There has to be this open space. Now, this idea, right, that there's open space here is for the beauty of the city. That's what the Gemara is suggesting at this point in time. Mishael, you have your question, which is, if it's for the beauty of the city, what about Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, that we don't cut trees down? Now, obviously, the mitigating factor is that this is Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. If you have a more beautiful city, then people will live in it, and that promotes Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Promotion of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael is that people with more beautiful cities and nicer cities don't want to live there, and that is a promotion of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. So it is, in that sense, right, not against that statement of Rabbi Yochanan. All right, now, the Gemara continues. Maishna Gabi Bor, Ketani Kotzeitz, Vinotein, Damim, Umaishna Hocha, Ketani Kotzeitz, Veno Notein Damim. Why is it different? This is that the often quoted mission that we've quoted that we'll get to, please God, tomorrow, which is that if you have two parties who have backyards, back-to-back backyards, one has a tree in his backyard and one has a boar in his backyard. And the tree's roots are going to come in and they're destroying his boar. So over there, the Mishnah says, or it's Machlokas, the Rabbi Yossi and the Rabbanan, at least according to the Rabbanan, if the tree was there first, the balabor has no right to cut it down. If the boar was there first, then the balabor has the right to cut the tree down, but he has to be noten damim, he has to pay for it. So why, by the case of boar, do we require him to pay for it? And yet here by the city, if the city was there first, we don't make them pay for it. What's the difference? So Rav Kana, kidra de beishutve lo chamima v'lo kerira. It's a principle of diffusion of responsibility. If you have multiple parties that are taking care of a pot on the fire, it never gets hot and it never gets cold. Everyone always thinks that the other one is going to do it. Right? So that's the same thing here by the city. If we leave it open to... Right. See, I don't think that's the... right. Too many cooks spoil the broth is not that... Right. That's not the case here, because that is that... Right. Too many people involved in the situation... They're doing too much, right? So this is the opposite. There is an English expression which I cannot think of, but here it's the concept of, or the principle of diffusion of responsibilities. But there's too many people who are supposedly responsible, and there's not devolve upon one person. Everybody thinks the other person is going to do it, and nothing ever gets done in this case. So same thing by the city. If we say that we demand of the city to pay money and then to cut the tree down, then what's going to happen? Who is obligated to pay? The whole city. So they're going to go around and try to collect money from the city. Every guy's going to go, get from the other guy. By the time, they're not going to get the money together to ever cut the tree down. So they say, cut the tree down, forget about the money, because otherwise we're never going to get this tree cut down, and it's going to be a pagam. You're never going to get this noi. It's going to be a pagam in Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Gemara says, my kushya. This is an unbelievable statement of the Gemara. What's the question here? Dilma shiny chazeket rabbi mezeket yochid. Why do you need this reasoning of diffusion of responsibility? Just say simply that the tree here outside of the city is not just mazik one individual, it's mazik the entire city. When you mazik the whole rabim, there's a different din than when you mazik an individual. In the case of the boar, it's two neighbors. Right? It's a disagreement between two neighbors. The two neighbors, you got to compensate when you take down the tree. Right? So over there, when you require a distance of the tree, and the person violates that and plants his tree, nevertheless you cut the tree down. You got to pay him, compensate him for the tree because it's between two parties. When you're talking about hezeket derabim, we're talking about violating the din or the ordinances of the city, which require you to move and not have a tree over here, then you're mazik the whole rabim. So over there, you're not going to get compensated. But what do you see from here? This is unbelievable now. What? That the planting a tree within 25 amot or 50 amot of the city, before we say, mishum no yair, as aesthetics. You're not allowed to plant the tree there because aesthetics, and that will diminish Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Now what are they suggesting? That's hezek. There's actually hezek from you diminishing the aesthetics of a city. You are actually causing damage to the people of the city. I see that it's an unbelievable jump from the Gemara to go from Noeyair, which is a positive statement of aesthetics, which will engender help Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, to say on the other hand that Tzad Sheni, which is that it's hezek. If you plant a tree inside of the 25 or 50 amot of the city, that you are mazik the people who live in the city because you are diminishing the aesthetics or the aesthetics of their city. So right, so now the Gemara says, "Ela itmar derav kahana seifa." If you want to talk about Rav Kahana, talk about the seifa itmar. Why? Ima ilan kadam. If the tree was there first, kotzeitz v'notein damim. Over there, he cuts the tree down and then he pays him. Lei malo havali bereisha demei v'chadar yikotz. Whoa, why over here by the city do we say cut the tree and then pay? Why don't we say pay and then cut the tree? So I'm Rav Kahana, kidra debe shutfei lo chamim lo karira. Now when it comes to, again, this idea that when you have a pot that's manned by many people, it never gets hot, never gets cold, diffusion of responsibility. What's going to happen in a city? Here you're mutar to cut the tree down, but you have to compensate the individual as the tree. What's going to happen? If you wait till you get the money, the tree will never get cut down. So what do we say? Cut the tree down, and then the owner of the tree is going to show up in Bezin and say, give me my money. And then the Bezin will impose it on the city to get the money. I mean, we need to get the action done without having to wait for everybody to get the money down. So that's exactly the reason that we say cut first, then pay money, is because we don't want diffusion of responsibility. Even though technically the din really should be compensate first and then cut the tree, because he's entitled to money here, he should get his money before the tree is cut down. That's the answer. That's where we'll apply the din of Rav Kahana. Safek zekadam v'zafek zekadam. Our mission says if it's a safek, kotzeitz v'notein damim. Why by the boar do we say damar lo yikotz? When there's a safek by the boar in the tree, the next Mishnah, right? We say don't cut the tree down. Over here, we say if there's a safek, cut the tree down. So that explains, when we explain the Mishnah at the Gemara, and Bob Metzia explained this as well, that hotam devade lav dam ikutz kai. In the case of the boar in the tree, it's not absolute that the tree will get cut down. Sveko neum elo amrim leikotz. Therefore, when you have a safek, you don't cut it down. Why? If the tree preceded the boar, we don't cut the tree down. If the boar preceded the tree, we do cut it down. So the safek in the din is whether you're going to cut it down or not cut it down. There are two possibilities. Meaning, even if we knew for certain what the din was, there are two outcomes. One is it cut down, one it's not. So therefore, when you have a safek, we say, amotzi mechaver alav araya. In order to cut it down, you need to bring a proof. Whereas halcha, in our case, as I pointed out in the Mishnah, in our case, the outcome is the same. In both cases, the tree gets cut down. The only safek is whether you get compensated for or not, right? Halcha, divided the miketzkai, safek unami amirim leikotz. Therefore, if you have a safek, the safek is not about whether it's going to get cut down. Because even if you knew bevadai that it was this way or that way, they both would get cut down. Imishum demei, if you're talking about compensation, amirim leikotzkai, v'shoko. So then, therefore, the part of it cutting down is an absolute. Therefore, we cut the tree down. Compensation, that is the safek over here, whether he's entitled to compensation. If he wants to get compensated, we say him, bring a raya, bring a proof that you're entitled to compensation, because that's really what the safek is here. The difference between the two cases is all about compensation, not about whether it's cut down. As opposed to the next mission, when it talks about a boar and ilan, then the safek is not about compensation, the safek is about whether you cut the tree or don't cut the tree down, and that's the differentiation and difference between these two mishnayot, or the dinim in these two mishnayot. Right now, the next mishnah. One may not set up a threshing floor, a silo, within 50 amot of this city. It seems to be, in what is in the Gemara, is the problem of when you thresh and you zore la ruach, the chaff that comes off of it floats away. All the debris or refuse from the working of the grains will now fly up in the air. And where are they going to land? It's going to land on everybody's property or every stuff in the city. So lo yaseh adam goren kavua b'toch shelo, elim ken yesh lo chamishim amah. Same is true in a field. If you are a field, you want to put a goren in your field, you got to ensure that you have 50 amot radius around you so that you don't affect the fields that are nearby, your neighboring fields. And one must distance his goren from the plowed field of his friend or the trees of his friend in order that it doesn't damage it. So it's a couple of questions that are going to come up. First of all, is why is the second half of the Mishnah used B'kadesh Yazik, and the first half of the Mishnah uses Chamishim Ama, use 50 Amot. Right? And then, obviously, the question about why. What's the problem here of the 50 Amot, which I somewhat described to you. Maishna Reisha, Maishna Seifa. So that's the first question of the Gemara. Why is the first category of Hezek, or the distance you have to do is 50 Amot, and the second one is Kadesh Yazik? Rabbi Seifa, Tan the Goren She'enu Kavua. There are two different cases in our Mishnah. The Reisha, the first half of the Mishnah, about a Goren Kavua, there you need 50 Amot. For a Goren She'enu Kavua, you only need Kadesh Lo Yazik. Hechidami Goren She'enu Kavua. What is a Goren She'enu Kavua? Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chinira, Koshenu Zure Berachat. It's got to do with volume. It's a quantitative point of what's considered a Goren Kavua and a Goren Kavua. It's whether you work it with a pitchfork or not. Right? It depends on whether you use a pitchfork. If the amount of grain that has been piled up is so small that you don't require a pitchfork to flip it in the air, Zor la Ruach, to move away the chaff, it naturally blows away, then that's called a Goren She'enu Kavua, and then you only have to do B'kadesh Lo Yazik. On the other hand, if you require a pitchfork to turn the grain over and the piles of grain in order to have the chaff fly away with the wind, then already you know it's a big enough goren that it's considered a goren kavua, and there you require 50 amot according to Abaye. Vashyamar matam kamar. The Rabbi Yossi says, no, that the Mishnah is the same. The din is the same in the Reish and the Seifa, but it's giving you an explanation of why do you have to leave 50 amot. The reason you have to leave 50 amot is kadei shelo yazik. That's it. My time of marchikin goren kavua min ha'ir chamishim amah, kadei shelo yazik. Right, that's the answer. They're synonymous. Chamishim Ama and Kadesh Lo Yazik are synonymous, similar to what we have in Bittul. Right, what do you say? We say that Bittul is B'shishim, and we say Notin Tam is B'shishim. Why is something Bittul B'shishim? Because flavor doesn't pass B'shishim. So they're synonymous. Shishim and Bittul Tamo, right, are synonymous because they are the same, right, the same principle. So over here too, that Chamishim Ama and Kadesh Lo Yazik are the same principle. Meitzve. Marchikin goren kavua mina ear, chamishim ama. Ukshem shemarchikin mina ear, chamishim ama, kark marchikin midulav, mikshuav, umnitiotav, umminero, shokhavero, chamishim ama, kadesh lo yazik. So what does this sound like? Bishlam ala Ravashi nechale. That sounds like Ravashi. Ravashi, the verse that we just quoted, says everything is 50 amot. Oh, there's only one standard for everything here where you can't plant it. That's 50 amot, and he applies it even to diluim, right? To gourds and zucchini and kishuav, right? To zucchinis and gourds, I mean tiotav and to trees and to Nero in his plowed field. Right? Nero is the plowing that they do in the summertime to take out all the weeds and the roots that are left there. So all these are required 50 amot. Abaye doesn't say that. Abaye says no. That only when it comes to the city we say 50 amot. When it came to Nero and Nitiotav, we said Kdei Shelo Yazik. But over here, the Bryce is suggesting that Chamishim Amah and Kdei Shelo Yazik are synonymous, just like Ravashi. That's what Mar says. Bishlam Ravashi Nechel. Abaye, Kasha. For Abaye, this is a problem, this Bryce. Mar says, Kasha, you're right. It is a big problem for Abaye. This is not going to be solved easily. Now, Bishlam Mikshuav Medulav, the Azil Avkov, Ata Belibe, Umitsuile, or Mitsavile. So over here, where we understand why you have to distance it away from his zucchinis and his gourds. You are working up the goren. Why? Because the chaff will go, fly into the vegetables, into the flowers, or into the fruits, into the heart of the item. Mitsuile means, I don't know if it means squeeze out or pull out, but it'll dry it out. It's going to ruin it. So we understand why you have to distance it. Elaminiro, oh my. Why, when he plows his field, this is an empty field, it's plowed, and the chaff that's going to fall there is going to provide dung, or you know, it's going to provide fertilization to the field in the upcoming year. So why should he worry about it? He makes it into a dirt pile, in a sense. What does that mean, a dirt pile? I mean that sometimes fertilization is good up to a point. But beyond a certain point, the fertilization makes the field not into a plantable field, but it makes it into a dump. Right? And that's exactly what you're going to do here. When you have too much chaff that's coming in here, it's going to, Rashi says, marvelo zevel, it's too much fertilization and it'll ruin the zraim, it'll ruin that which you plant there. Right? Even though, in general, fertilization helps, when it's all fertilization, then it's mazik, it ruins the field, and it becomes a dump or a unusable field, and therefore that's the problem over here, why you must distance it 50 amot from the city. Okay, we'll stop here.